NPR.
Hey, everyone, it's Cardiff. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. And today I'm joined by Robin Jurovich. Robin is a staff writer at Capital in Maine, a news organization based in Los Angeles. Robin, hi. You've brought us this story about one of the biggest issues in the U.S. today, which is housing and homelessness.
That's right. And the story starts with Sasha Atkins. She's a 31-year-old single mom. She lives in the L.A. area. She's a hairstylist who, before the pandemic, had a second job serving food at sports stadiums. But even when she was working, she didn't earn enough to rent her own place.
Yeah, instead, she and her 9-year-old son lived with her mom, at least until 3 years ago, when that relationship between her and her mom started to deteriorate. And since then, Sasha and her son have stayed with family or friends, or occasionally in a motel. But when COVID hit, she lost both of her jobs and her housing options along with her jobs.
You had to keep in mind the safety of everybody, so it was harder to stay with family because it just made things more difficult. It made tensions higher. It made everything harder.
So hard that at one critical point last November, Sasha was facing the prospect of having to live on the street. She was desperate. And so as a result, she did something extremely risky, something illegal, but also something that an increasing number of people around the country are doing to put a roof over their heads.
At this point, I just wanted to secure housing for my son and give him a safe place to live and a place to call home.
Robin is going to tell us more about Sasha's story right after a quick break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from McDonald's. Growing up in Oakland, Ron knew he could go places. He just didn't know where. So he started out at McDonald's. Ron took advantage of McDonald's college tuition assistance program and became the first in his family to earn a degree, which helped him land a job that he really wanted, working in operations for McDonald's headquarters. To hear Ron tell his story, visit mcdonalds.com/skills happen here.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Financial Times. 2020 was a year like no other. And for 2021, the FT is asking if the U.S. and the world can steer from crisis to recovery. Their award-winning reporters look behind the headlines to discover the real impact of the issues affecting society. The FT considers key questions such as, after vaccine approval, is the global economy poised for a powerful rebound in 2021? Read carefully selected free articles at ft.com/new agenda.
In March last year, a group of homeless and housing insecure people broke into a number of empty homes in a neighborhood of Los Angeles and occupied them. They called themselves reclaimers.
And these houses that they occupied were owned by Caltrans, which is California's transportation agency. Caltrans had started buying homes, more than 400 of them, as far back as the 1950s as a way to make room for a freeway extension. But that extension was never built, and some of the homes lay empty for years.
The reclaimer said it was unacceptable that usable homes owned by the state were lying empty when people were homeless and living on the street.
And remarkably, none of the reclaimers were evicted. Instead, state officials agreed to lease more than 20 of the houses to the city's housing authority, which then allowed a dozen families to live in them for 2 years, part of a transitional housing program. And Sasha Atkins was inspired by this story. She had connected with a group of families who were like her. They were housing insecure, struggling to find stable housing. And together, with community organizers and local activists, they came up with a plan to reclaim some of those Caltrans homes themselves and then see if they could strike a similar deal with housing officials to let them stay in those homes.
No one wants to break into a home and have to reclaim a home, you know? I mean, we all want the fair chance to be able to provide that for our own families. And unfortunately, it's not available to everybody. So it was definitely a last resort.
The night before Thanksgiving, Sasha left her son with her mom, grabbed her phone, blankets, and a laptop. Along with a dozen other families, she went to the El Sereno neighborhood in Northeast LA, where there was a cluster of more than 100 vacant Caltrans homes.
The group went in quietly, but not in secret. They carried signs to place in the window that said, quarantine in progress so that everyone would know what their intentions were. Some of the group were longtime residents of the neighborhood who knew the history of the houses, and they helped identify houses that were in good enough shape to possibly accommodate a family.
The group also knew the homes would be locked, so they brought lockpicking kits along. Sasha learned how to use hers online.
YouTube is an amazing thing. It was actually really easy, scaredly easy, you know? But again, it was something that we needed to do to do this. And, you know, I didn't want to make a lot of noise and scare the neighbors. You know, I figured this was the best route.
Once Sasha made it inside the house she had chosen, she began moving from room to room, looking through spaces and boarded up windows to see if law enforcement had been alerted.
I was just going from like one side of the house to the next. I was just trying to stay alert and just make sure, like, oh God, you know, what am I going to do if they do come?
Sasha had never done anything like this before, so it was a scary experience. But later that night, when officers from the California Highway Patrol, the CHP, arrived on a nearby street, things got even more frightening.
I was watching Instagram Live, and I was just watching how the CHP were coming into other homes and, you know, forcibly removing people. That was scary. I just knew that I did not want that to be me, you know? And so I was very nervous. I was very scared. I was sad. I was crying a lot. But, like, after you seeing, you know, house after house get taken down, it just felt like it was a matter of time before they were going to come for me, too.
Eventually, officers did come to the house she had occupied, and another group of reclaimers helped to hide her, but it was just clear to Sasha that this was not going to be a replay of the reclaimers' victory of 7 months earlier. The city was not going to do a deal with her group. She just wasn't going to be able to stay in one of these homes. She had to leave.
It didn't work. It was a horrible feeling because, like, my son, he just knew I was going to get a house and setting up a house for us, you know? And to have to come home and tell my son, like, oh, no, I'm sorry, we didn't get it. It was a really crappy feeling. It was horrible.
There are vacant properties, private and state-owned, all over the U.S. that could be used to house families like Sasha's. Politics, legal issues, bureaucratic inertia have all made it hard to rent, develop, or sell them.
But there are officials in some urban areas that are stricken by homelessness who are increasingly willing to consider some newer, innovative solutions to the housing crisis. To be clear, we're talking about solutions beyond the obvious, like allowing more homes to be built or building more affordable housing. And so one of these innovative ideas that's gotten some traction is to fold vacant government-owned dwellings into something called a community land trust. Once homes are in the trust, they can be developed for affordable housing.
Last fall, for example, a group of single moms took over a vacant house in Oakland, and they were able to arrange for a land trust to purchase it. Also last fall, Philadelphia activists pushed the local housing authority to turn over 59 houses to a local land trust so they can be rehabbed and remain affordable.
The idea has even gotten some traction in Los Angeles, where the County Board of Supervisors established a working group of 5 existing land trusts. It also allocated $14 million to try out the idea. Those trusts don't incorporate the Caltrans homes that Sasha Atkins and her group had tried to reclaim, but the state legislature is considering a bill that would sell those homes so that they can then be developed to accommodate people who are homeless or housing insecure.
But Sasha's still searching for permanent housing for her and her son, and the experience has given her a taste for the fight to push the city to create more affordable housing. She's still in touch with the reclaimers, who are keeping the pressure on elected officials. They're hoping to convince these officials to include those Caltrans houses in El Sereno in a land trust. And if they do decide to stage another takeover?
I'm ready for them to let me know, hey, let's do this.
Robin Yurovich, thanks so much for bringing us this story.
You're welcome.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Jamila Huxtable and fact-checked by Sam Tsai, and it was edited by Patty Hirsch. You can read more of Robin Yurovich's reporting, including more of Sasha Atkins' story, at capitalinmaine.com. The Indicator from Planet Money is a production of NPR.
The news is about more than what just happened. You need to know why it happened, who made it happen, how it's felt in the communities you care about. NPR's daily news podcast, Consider This, gives you all of that, with context, backstory, and analysis on a single topic every weekday. It's not just information, it's what the news means. Consider This from NPR.